So when people ask me where I'm from in my more caustic moments, I reply that I escaped from Indiana a couple of decades ago. Honestly, though, there was a lot about the Midwest that I really did like, despite the way I talk sometimes, particularly the promise of the seasons. Autumn's vibrant red and gold leaves signaled the certainty that winter was coming. Winter's bracing cold foretold the spring that was to come, and the heaven of summer was made all the more bittersweet by the turning of those leaves once again come fall. The obvious changing of the seasons was a promise that there was more to come, that the cycle continued, and that within inevitable change, there was the certainty that life holds on. And moving to Southern California meant I no longer noticed the seasons in the same way, and for a while it seemed like that promise of earth and sky was gone. And it was easy to believe that the promise had disappeared. After all, we live in a world of broken promises. Politicians who promise so much and deliver so little. Promises between one group and another broken on a whim. And promises to ourselves that we so often break. This is no surprise. Our world privileges power and domination, and so promises are often considered of value only as long as they uphold the dominant systems. You know, I read a lot of 19th century literature, and I'm always struck by how important someone's reputation was in those days. Now, admittedly, the expectations of gender or class in these books are outmoded, but some of these ideas about character persuade me to think we might have lost something along the way, especially in a time when the public discourse consists of those in power speaking factually inaccurate or insulting words off the cuff, words that are sometimes denied later despite digitally recorded evidence to show otherwise. Instead, I think back to an era when cameras weren't tracking every corner of a person's life and how then there was often only someone's word to determine what was true or not. Certainly, people still lied. They still spoke thoughtlessly. But there was a cultural emphasis on veracity, on the sacredness of one's word. And indeed, in some societies, especially agrarian ones based on the rhythms of the season, there is still truth in this. In a critique of contemporary American culture, environmental activist Wendell Berry said, "If the ideals and aims of young people have lost energy, it's because they haven't the stability of a commitment to one place and one community." When we belong to a community, a promise is fulfilled. A promise is fulfilled not because someone catches us on video making that promise or breaking it, though we see in recent news events that even this kind of accountability seems to be disappearing. No, a promise is fulfilled because we have freely entered into this promise and because we know how important it is to the community and the larger world that we live up to it. I'm building up to the word we've been talking about today, the next step beyond a promise. That word is, of course, covenant. Now, for some of us, that evokes images of legal contracts. For others, the word conjures up the God of the Hebrew Bible, promising Abraham that his people would be the chosen people, and indeed that biblical story serves as a cornerstone of the Judeo-Christian tradition. And yet for others, the word covenant is an obsolescent one, only relevant in the American vernacular for evoking images of early pilgrims and Puritans, as we saw. And indeed, for our purposes, they wouldn't be far wrong. For out of those Puritans' early covenant of communities, based on consent and mutual responsibilities, the forerunners of today's Unitarian Universalist churches began. The Cambridge Platform is a carefully considered document. The Puritans wanted to show how their understanding of a congregation mirrored that of the family of Sarah and Abraham, who they considered the first free church. And so they, I think in a gesture toward the exacting intellectualism that would characterize future Unitarian Universalists, footnoted this short document, the Cambridge Platform, with 308 scriptural references. Some things never change, right? And yet other things do change. You know, I'm not sure the particulars of the story of Abraham and Sarah speak directly to Unitarian Universalists today, such as God's promise that of Abraham's descendants will, some of them will even be kings. Most of us nowadays aren't looking for a king. We're looking for wise leaders who will promote just policies that compassionately address social diversity. But the Puritans weren't looking for a king either. In fact, that was the system they had run away from. They were interpreting the Abraham story through the lens of their own experience and knowledge, which was certainly different than that of their biblical forebears. And likewise, the Cambridge platform for us today has less to do with its biblical justification and far more to do with its still revolutionary notion of the free church. Alice Blair Wesley says the Cambridge platform defines the covenanted free church as a body of individuals who have freely made a profoundly simple promise, a covenant. We pledge to walk together in the spirit of mutual love. So we shall meet often to take counsel concerning the ways of love, and we will yield religious authority solely to our own understanding of what these ways are as best we can figure them out or learn to remember them together. So in other words, our covenant asks of us to nudge each other to places of growth, even when it's painful. And let's be real. Sometimes it is painful. This congregation has known individual and collective pain. We have experienced loss. We have felt grief. Like the cycle of life, like the seasons of time, these things are unavoidable. And yet, while the presence of covenant isn't ostentatiously visible on an everyday basis, it can move quietly along with us through the challenges ahead by keeping our hearts focused on what is most important, just as this congregation has done as it weathered the internal and external challenges of the previous years. Like the seasons that move by, to which we sometimes have to pay close attention to see their vaguely shifting colors, so too is our pledge to one another and to the faith that is bigger than any one of us. One of the promises of the world around us, political scientist Daniel J. Elazar draws a direct line from the Puritan covenanting process, the Cambridge platform, to the founding of the United States, a country distinguished by its rejection of the organic political model in which politics naturally flow out of those who hold power in the center. Instead, the United States is based on a revolutionary covenantal model, emerging from people who join together through a covenant as equals to unite and establish common governing institutions without sacrificing their respective integrities. And so our very nation is built on this promise of equality. Yet many of us realize how far we still have to go to fulfill this promise. Last week we heard Langston Hughes' poem, "Let America Be America Again," in which he lamented, "Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above." For many, the poor, people of color, the disabled, non-Christians, BLGTQ folks, women, America's covenant of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness has not been upheld, and the days ahead suggest more fissures to the bedrock of this covenant. In his book, Religious Commitment and Secular Reason, Robert Audie says, "Democratic government is entirely dependent on the people it represents. A democratic society that does not effectively combat evils of structural injustice, apathy, fanaticism, corruption, threats to democracy is at best unstable." I would add that a democratic society like ours that does not combat these injustices is not only unstable, it is also backing away from the very promise that served as the seed of its inception. Our country's forefathers, so many of whom identified with the cultural movement of Unitarianism of the time, offered a promise in our Constitution, a living, evolving promise that is not immune and should not be immune from the shifting realities of time, knowledge, and experience, an argument with which I am convinced these prophetic individuals would be in agreement. But what this means is that this promise is also not immune from corruption, from authoritarianism, and even from annihilation. For covenants are only as strong as the people who hold them. And so here we find ourselves in an historical moment where there is much challenge ahead, but much possibility too. And we sit here in this community bound by a promise, by a covenant. We are not here because there is a cultural expectation that we be here. In fact, there is not. We are not here because we believe that the fires of hell will get us if we don't. And if you do believe that, come and talk to me because we need to chat. We are not here because the state demands we be here. No, we are here because of a promise, because of the Cambridge platform written so many years ago, which modeled for us that the ideal community is one based on free will, on people coming together and saying, yes, it matters that we are part of this. Yes, we will treat each other with kindness and love. Yes, we will work together until there is a more just world for all. And we live out our covenant in concrete ways, like attending the candlelit vigil earlier this week, where those of us from UUCF, along with undocumented immigrants, Muslim women, African Americans, documented and undocumented Americans of Mexican descent, gathered to say we will not allow fear to stop us from working for the dignity of every person. We live out our covenant when we show up for the causes we believe in, like so many did who already shared with you how meaningful the Women's March was for them. We live out our covenant when we participate in next week's letter writing campaign to say we can do better on healthcare. We live out our covenant whenever and however we choose to support a community like this one and all it does. Now, I'm really proud of UUCF, and I can best describe a covenantal community like this one as countercultural in today's world of suspicion, doubt, and mistrust, where true dialogue has been all but erased in favor of sound bites that favor arrogance over enlightenment. And yet here we are, publicly living out a great promise of love and trust. And it is a great promise. It stretches to encompass the tradition of where we come from and for where we hope we can go. It honors all those who have paved the way for us to do the work we are called to do now, from martyrs like Michael Servetus, our Unitarian forefather who was burned at the stake for speaking his mind, to free thinkers like Susan B. Anthony, who changed the social consciousness, to the countless justice workers of the past and present. Reverend Susan Frederick Gray says, "Our covenants call us not just into relationship with one another, but into relationship with a larger calling. Covenant is also an expression of why it matters that our community is here, how it will change our lives, and how it will make a difference in the world. This promise is one we make to and through each other, recognizing that the cycle of life will go on, that there is a larger sense of hope, courage, trust, and love that we can lean into, and that we will need to move, to change, to adapt, to experience love and loss, joy and sorrow, and fail, and to succeed, and to work for justice, and to never stop hoping that there is more that can be in this world." And so I learned in my time away from the Midwest that it's not that the seasons are gone, despite the fact that there aren't those rich autumnal colors on the trees or pristine snowdrifts followed by that outrageously colorful miracle of spring. The promise I thought I had left behind is still there. I just have to look for it more. The seasons still come, albeit a little less flamboyantly, but they are there, marked in different ways, by the coming of a new year, by an inauguration day. And yet, while we must absolutely acknowledge the changing shades of the seasons of our lives, the seasons of our nation, the seasons of our world, we must also keep nurturing and living into that underlying covenant of hope and accountability, which is always there. And my goodness, I hope we can see that promise today. When we gather together, surrounded by each other, by the promise of Martin Luther King's beloved community, by the covenant that binds us, hope and possibility crackle like electricity in the air. We've all gathered here in this moment, and it's alive and real and in front of us, and we feel like we can take on the world, and tomorrow is Monday. Real life sets in, and we will find ourselves waking up to a world, a nation that remains deeply troubled and divided. And yet that covenant to maintain this community and that covenant to transform the world is steadfast. It will remain. Our work is to hold on to it for the most important things in life and beyond life are the things that can only be held in our hearts and minds. May we never forget the promise we carry. May we nurture that covenant with love, helping one another to spread our wings as we journey through the seasons of our lives. Spring showers, summer storms, and winter cold may be ahead. But the promise of the earth below us and the sky above us will endure.